Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
As the COVID-19 situation evolves into a bigger shit show each day, it's more important than ever to speak up to protect both yourself and your family as well as others. We're all in this together, as the neoliberal sloganeering goes. As an individual, you have power to influence your local community. On today's episode, we'll discuss why this is the case and cover some examples of how to exert your power. The basic premise we'll focus on is hierarchical autonomy, which is a fancy name for nested power structures. You have the federal government, then the state government, then counties, towns, and school districts. At each level, decisions can be deferred to the lower level. This is the basic premise behind states' rights, which was the rationale used to allow slavery to persist in the South by deferring the decision to each state. The same concept is being used again to preserve a modern slavery through exploitation of the working class.
So as it goes on, and we've seen the economy sort of slowing down and sputtering and starting back up, COVID-19 has been exposing all the worker exploitation in the world. So workers are basically required to work because corporations don't give a shit about their health, and governments aren't doing anything or placing any safeguards to protect the workers because they care about corporate profits, because they care about being job creators, and they want to make sure they have money flowing through the coffers. So why is there such terrible public policy decisions being made?
Well, the obvious answer would be there's a profit motive. The policymakers have some incentive to do X so that some investment they've made, or one of their family members, or some economic windfall. But I think there's a better explanation. The bureaucracy around decision-making promotes deferring decisions to more local levels because it enforces the concept of, why would I make a decision when I could make somebody else make a decision? Because I don't want to incur any of the political ramifications. I don't want to be held accountable. I don't want to be punished electorally. The best example of this can be seen as we as a society attempt to make decisions about schooling in the fall.
Yeah, this is a topic that's always kind of baffled my mind. But we have these school districts, and they're made up of people that are supposed to love and care for kids and love education. And they get together and they form policy, and they have to follow standards, I guess, from the state and maybe the federal government. But they actually have the autonomy to do what they want. And so as we take a look at the decision-making of the school district, it's basically driven by independence or individual thinking. So if you have a bunch of groupthink that says that COVID is not true or it's a hoax, they're going to vote, you know, to keep the schools open. If you have a school district that knows it's causing problems or in a high death rate county, you're going to start closing down schools. So we know that there basically is scientific proof that when you expose people to herds of, a herd of people, that somebody in that herd will have COVID and someone's going to get it. Indiana just saw cases. Georgia just saw cases go up. I mean, it's real, right? So we know that if schools are resumed with in-person teaching, the virus will spread and it would result in additional deaths beyond those expected if children were taught remotely. And we know that. That's a statement. We know that for a fact. And we know this because when the children get it, they still have the ability to die, and they're going to spread it because R value is greater than one. And yet we have school districts who are allowed to make decisions because nobody from the top, nobody at the presidential office, nobody at the Department of Education, nobody at the state level, nobody at the county level has ever made a decision that says you can't do these things to take away those authority.
Yeah, so we know that people are going to die if A, then B, and we're proposing that if you send kids back to school, they will get COVID and affect others and die and potentially die themselves. So if we assume that public officials know this, why do they consistently make absolutely terrible decisions kind of based on this information? So in the example of a school district, their primary kind of task is to be the body that governs schools. They're not really set up to make healthcare decisions. Like, the people on school boards might not even be qualified to be on school boards from an educational perspective. And now they've sort of been tasked with making like district-wide healthcare decisions based on basically no central planning. Like, they're just potential parents, you know, it could be people that are highly educated on the field of education, but they're not highly educated on virus transmission or public health, any of that stuff. But they're somehow the entity at the last line where they can decide whether school is a go or a no-go.
This is completely sort of insane. It's like, I don't know, you learn about why the rocket exploded, the Challenger exploded.
I don't care how cold it is, that rocket's going up.
That's right. And you learn because the person making the decision about the rocket going up was a manager and not a technical person. And so the experts in the room were sort of pushed aside because the autonomy of the management was allowed to get through and kill a bunch of astronauts and a teacher. At the same time, you had the same sort of idea here where you have a bunch of just not unqualified people who had opened up Thursdays at 7 o'clock every other Thursday to sit around a table and bullshit with each other, ran for the school district. Why? Because it's supposed to be, you know, from the community and growing it. But in the end, it's only people that are actually able to run. And we talked about this before in previous episodes, how really running in politics is all about privilege. And if you're privileged to run, you can run, or passionate about it. But really, it's just your influence circle that got you elected. So a bunch of these psychopaths that have no idea what teachers do or what children go through every day are sitting around saying, please go back to school in person because you took our tax money. You better go back to school. Even though it costs a ton of money for PPEs and it's super dangerous for the kids, they don't care because they're the ones making the decision. I saw that on Fox News. It was a hoax. My Facebook friend said the virus isn't really that bad. I went to South Dakota so I could be in a bike rally, I guess. That's me dunking on the bike rally. So in the end, I mean, it's basically just, it's insane. And I don't even know how else to say it. And it really, it comes down to empowerment. And so how do you stop and how do you start this sort of culture? And it starts, one, with holding people accountable for their actions. And it starts with people getting involved and asking, well, why are we still meeting and going to school?
If we look at it from the perspective of the school board, where they would consciously have to decide to do remote learning, it's a lot of fucking work if they were to say, oh, we're not going to do in-person classes in all of these giant, enormous schools that we already have that already have bureaucracy in place to teach kids. We're going to do something totally different. Oh, and by the way, we just squandered the last 4 months doing absolutely nothing to prepare for this. Yeah, it seems like a lot of work. So what if we just kind of, I don't know, just sent kids back because it seems easier. And I mean, there's like 8 of us on this board. So, I mean, if we all vote, I mean, none of us can be all held accountable, right? And there's a bunch of people making the same decision, so I won't be culpable. And then you have CNN who's kind of ranting about, oh, look at all these schools that have already started in Georgia, and let's put high school kids on TV and ask them if they feel it's safe. And it's just this deference from people that have expertise in public health to random people that don't. And I'm including people on the school board. I'm including high school students. Like, your pre-algebra class has not prepared you to model virus outbreaks in a classroom setting at a school. It's a deferral, and they just keep deferring to anybody that will accept any amount of responsibility. And we talked a little bit about the college football on our previous episode, and that's actually an example of two conferences, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, not deferring the decision and making a decision. And it should have a good outcome in that it will prevent athletes from getting COVID. So it is possible.
And it is, not only is it possible, it also begs the question of why are certain decisions being made at the level and why are they actually being made this way? The superintendent should have the ability to supersede the decisions of the school board and these type of roles, but they don't, right? They serve the elected officials.
They serve the school board.
They serve the school board, right? They serve at the pleasure of the school board. So keep that in mind. And at the same time, there's a county and normally state that has other directives. I mean, a county official at any level could come in and say, it is a violation of public health for you to have these meetings in school. You must do virtual learning. Because the school board would have to follow the state requirements or the county requirements for the health. They'd have to. right? Just like restaurants can't have food if the county says you can't serve food without a mask on, whatever it happens to be. At the same time, who holds the schools accountable if they violate any of the laws that says you have to have social distancing? Right? The school board's not going to get in trouble for it. They made the decision to open the schools up. The superintendent's not going to be in trouble for it because he sent the memo saying we have to follow the rules. The principal's not going to get in trouble for it because he can't control the students. The teachers can't get in trouble for it because what were they doing? Teaching classes. They're not in the hallways when the kids take their masks off. So then a bunch of the firmen again where nobody's held accountable for their actions. And this happens at every single level. And this is why it's super important for you to get involved locally. And we know that school boards are meeting right now to make these decisions. So it's actually up to anybody listening here to get involved and actually start getting crazy. So how do we do this?
So if you're focused on actually making a difference, act locally. So here's what you can do. And we're going to use a very specific example relating to the school board. So determine what school district you are in. And if you have kids, you probably already know this. It's probably going to be like a 3-digit number, school district, you know, 1, 2, 3. Figure out what district you're in. Some states are a little bit different. They might be run by the counties or the cities, or they might be overlapping. Depends on your state. Determine who is on your school board. It's typically a number between, you know, 6 and 13 people, something like that. There's usually elections in something like 2 or 4 year intervals. And these are the people that run your school district and are deciding whether school starts back up again, depending on your state. Same with the superintendent. While the superintendent does serve at the sort of blessing of the school board, they're kind of perceived to be the person with power, even though they really don't have any power. But if you can go after the superintendent, that kind of forces the school district to respond in a way because they are... they're kind of the figurehead. So what you want to do is figure out who these people are, and you want to contact them. And you want to basically ask a line of questioning premised on, you are sending kids back to school, and if you send kids back to school, additional people will get sick with COVID. How many people are you okay with getting sick with COVID? How many deaths are acceptable? And they might not answer. Doesn't really matter. The idea is to ask, and some people will respond, and you get them on record. And then next cycle, you want to run against them and say, when this person had the opportunity to care about our children, they voted to open schools, and they knew that X number of kids were going to die, and that was fine. Like, that's an insane position for anybody to have from the school perspective of, we want to educate kids, but it's worth a couple of them dying. Like, that's fine.
And the reason why you have to be this explicit is because you have to send a message. It's really important that you not only phrase it, but you get them on record. And this allows a couple of things. It allows you to call back to say when this happened. This is what they said. It allows you to see the response. They're going to get shitty with you right away. And they're going to be insane. And it allows the media to see and hear what they're doing.
Additional bonus, you can do a data request for maybe some of the modeling or some of the public data that the school districts may or may not have, and they don't have any of it. I mean, that's fine. Part of it is just kind of poking the bear a little bit. Make people aware that you are coming for them.
Yes, shot over the bow. And the more you get active, the more you'll see the corruption that's around you. And so once you start dealing with the city council, or I should say from the school board, you get to the city council and you start to see the corruption there. And you start to see all the back end or the backdoor deals, and every time that they rub somebody else's back, so they get something in return. So one of the examples is anytime the developer comes in and asks for a rebate of tax money from the city council for any type of development work they do. So an example is if let's say the city has vacant property that used to be an old gas station. If somebody wants to come in and turn it into a McDonald's or some other thing, they may ask for rebates for environmental cleanup, even though the environmental cleanup should have been done by either the previous owner or the fact that the developer bought the land knowing the environmental cleanup had to be done. So what happens? The taxpayers get footed with the bill for X amount of money, let's say $500,000 to help clean up the waste funds. And then what happens is nothing gets returned to the taxpayers. You don't own part of the business. There's no guarantee that they're only going to hire people from your town. There's no guarantee you're going to have $20 an hour jobs. There's none of those guarantees. It's just a kickback for a local developer. And these are the type of things that when you get active locally, you start to uncover, and you can start to make a real difference in how the taxpayer, which is yourself, gets treated in your own city or area.
Yeah, and so the property tax rebate is one thing. Another way is that money that is kind of apportioned for various things in the city are redirected to certain entities with certain connections. You know, this can happen with construction, where you can kind of redirect contracts for road work. It happens with charities where we say, oh, we want to do a charity to raise awareness about, you know, some cause, and, you know, we'll help facilitate donations, and we're going to put a little blurb on our mailer and send it out to everybody on the water bill or something. So the city is kind of doing free advertising for a private entity, and then that private entity benefits. On the surface, there's nothing really, you know, wrong with that, but it serves to kind of redirect taxpayer dollars towards something that doesn't necessarily directly benefit the taxpayer. It degrades the intent of the government's purpose, which is to serve people, and instead kind of refocuses it on serving a private entity.
Mm-hmm. And one more example that I think most people are familiar with, maybe you're not, but pay attention to it, is a lot of states have requirements that they give public notice. And what cities do is they choose some small rinky-dink paper that's supposed to be focused on the town to do public notices. And what they're really doing is giving themselves free advertisement through these and partnering with people that also work within these newspapers. And so you see a flooding of money from the city into these small entities that are taking ad revenue, and they exist not to cover the city politics or city itself, but just to display information for the city. And this is just another type of corruption. Instead of them using the major paper of the area, they're using a small paper that allows them to have control of the content. And they get fluff pieces saying how good they're doing and how well the police are not shooting people and how well they're not stealing your tax money and how non-poisonous your water is and those type of things, because this newspaper knows that if it turns its back on the city, it goes away because it no longer has revenue from all the public notices.
So what this all means is that all of this happens in your local community, whether you know about it or not. But you do actually have the ability to influence what happens locally, because you are local. You can go disrupt meetings. You can ask questions. You can basically just complain to people. And the very presence of you being there and poking is enough for a lot of people to kind of think twice. It creates just enough of an incentive to make people rethink their actions. And that's good. It also is kind of you watching over your local money, which is actually based on real money. So you pay your taxes locally, that money goes into a bucket, and that is the budget that must be spent locally. There's no like issuing of debt and then China buys your debt and you can just print money. Like, that does not happen locally. That happens federally. Locally, your money is your money, and it's important to watch over it, but to also ensure that it's being used for the public good. And we're advocating that schools do not open and we figure out how to use your money appropriately to ensure that kids are safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not only is it using your money, but it's also wasting your time. And it's dividing, you know, generally what could be done with what, you know, should be done and what they decide to be done. So things like park expansion, things like that, are all controlled, you know, by the city councils and by the county commissioners. And once you get active, you're going to find out that you may have a passion to actually run and make a change. And that's just what we advocate for here, is that we may not believe that electoralism can make a change at the national level, but we do know it does make a change at the local and state level.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.